Fuck off, Lena replied with a mean smile. If you think referring to us as bitches is going to get you invited into the conversation, let alone one of our beds, you're about to be deeply disappointed, Sloane said.
Move along, Reaper,
Joel told him without looking up from the quart of vodka he was pouring into Sloane's glass. My phone buzzed on the bar and I glanced down. Knox.
That wasn't what it looked like. I'm not seeing Lena.
Knox.
Not that it's any of your business.
Knox.
Fuck. At least text me back and tell me where you are.
For someone who was done with me, he sure texted a whole heck of a lot. Naomi. It's this awesome place called None of Your Business. Stop texting me. I slid my phone over to Sloane. Here, you're in charge of this. Lena held up her phone to show us a text.
Knox, where the fuck did you take her?
See, she said. Fear. I don't think I'm going back to work today, I said. Hey, Waylay is hanging out at a museum in D.C. with Nina and her dads. There's no better way to spend a fall Saturday than getting blitzed.
What's a Waylay? Lena asked.
My niece. The niece Naomi didn't know about because her estranged twin sister sucks, Sloane added. She twirled the tip of her braid around her fingers and stared blankly at the football game on the screen. Are you okay? I asked her. I'm fine. I'm just sick of men. Amen, sister, I said, raising my glass at her. My sister, Chloe's mom, she's bi. Every time she dates a man who pisses her off, she ends up dating nothing but women for like 12 months. She's my hero. Makes me wish I didn't like penis so much. Joel said a Bloody Mary with a floating stick of bacon in front of Sloane and didn't bat an eye at the word penis. I winced. Please don't say penis. My experience with Knox's equipment is almost 20 years old, so I can only imagine how much better he's gotten with age, Lena said with sympathy. You know, with this whole guardianship, maybe it's just better to focus on being a parent figure and forget about being a woman with sexual needs, Sloane filled in. I picked up my wine. How many glasses would it take to forget about sex? Usually around 1.5 bottles, but that comes with a hangover that cuts you off at the knees for 3 days, so I wouldn't recommend, Lena said. He really made me believe, I whispered. Joel lined up the shots in front of us, and I stared at mine. I know he said things wouldn't go anywhere, but he made me believe. He kept showing up, not just for me, but for Waylay, too. Back the truck up. Knox, Morgan, spent time with your kid, willingly. He took her shopping. He showed up at her soccer game and got her to stop swearing. He told her that strong people stand up for the ones who can't stand up for themselves. He picked her up at a sleepover, watched football with her. Lena shook her head. He's so fucked up. All men are, Sloane said. Joel stopped and gave her the eye. Except you, Joel. You're a hero among villains, she amended. With a nod, he handed over a fresh glass of wine for me and vanished again. Sloane attached herself to the straw of her drink like it was a protein shake after a bodybuilding competition. Okay, seriously, what's going on with you? I asked. Does this have something to do with Lucian last night?
Lucian? Now that's a sexy name, Lena said.
Sloane snorted. A sexy name to go with a sexy man, I agreed. There's nothing sexy about Lucian Rollins, Sloane said when she came up for air. Okay, you're definitely lying. Either that or an entire section of the Dewey Decimal System fell on your head. She shook her head and picked up her shot. I'm not talking about Lucian. None of us are talking about Lucian. We're talking about Knox. Can we stop talking about him? I asked. It felt like an X-Acto knife to the heart every time I heard his name. Of course, Lena said. Cheers, Sloane said, lifting her shot glass. We clinked glasses and knocked back the whiskey. A man with a toothpick dangling precariously from his mouth wandered up and leaned an elbow on the bar, crowding Lena. His t-shirt didn't quite cover the belly that peeked out over the top of his black jeans.
Which one of you ladies wants to come check out the back of my bike?
Joel lined up another round of shots in front of us. Lena picked up her shot. Sloane and I followed suit and knocked them back. She put the glass down on the bar, and before Toothpick knew what was happening, she had the stiletto of her boot digging into his chest.
Go away before I make you bleed in front of your friends, she said.
I like her and her shoes, Sloane whispered next to me.
Christ, Python, leave him alone before your old lady shows up and cuts off your balls.
Listen to the nice man, Python, Lena said, giving him a shove with her foot.
He slid down the bar foot, then put his hands up.
Just asking. Didn't know you were lesbos.
Because that's the only reason we wouldn't want to fuck you, right? Sloane said. Sloane was a lightweight, and she'd already had two shots and a very strong Bloody Mary. Can we maybe get some water? I asked Joel. He nodded, then cupped his hands.
Listen up, assholes. The ladies aren't looking for a ride or a good time. Next idiot who bothers them is getting thrown out.
There was a general muttering around us, and then everyone went back to what they were doing. Joel, are you married? I asked. He held up his left hand to show me a gold band. All the good ones are taken, I complained. The front door opened again.
You have got to be kidding me,
Sloane groaned. Joel handed over a fresh Bloody Mary and she dove for it. I swiveled around on my stool, wobbling a bit as the alcohol fought my equilibrium.
Oh my, Lena purred next to me. Who are they?
More cavalry,
Sloane muttered. Lucian and Nash wandered up to the bar looking six shades of gorgeous. 44. The Babysitters. Naomi. This can't be a coincidence, I observed.
Knox called the cops, Lucian said, nodding at Nash, and the cops called me.
Nash skimmed me with a look.
You all right?
I'm fine. Why are you here? Nash blew out of breath, his gaze moving on to Lena. She arched an eyebrow at him.
We're babysitting,
he said finally. My mouth dropped open. We don't need babysitters, especially not babysitters who are just going to report everything we say back to Knox.
I hate to point out the obvious, but given everything that's happened, I don't think you should be out unprotected like this,
Nash said. Who said I'm unprotected? Lena just nearly pierced a man's sternum with her stilettos, I complained. How did you find us?
I wouldn't worry about that,
Lucian said without looking away from Sloane, who was glaring at him like he was Satan incarnate.
You've got to be a Morgan,
Lena said, resting her elbows on the bar and giving Nash a head-to-toe sweep. Lena, this is Nash, Knox's brother, I said.
On that note, I think I'll be heading home, Sloane said, sliding off her stool.
She didn't get far. Lucian stepped in on her, trapping her between the bar and his body without touching her. She tilted her head all the way back to look up at him. She was a foot shorter than the man, but that didn't stop Sloane from shooting ninja throwing stars out of her eyeballs.
You'll stay, he insisted darkly.
I'm going, she argued.
I count three empty glasses on the bar in front of you. You'll stay.
I'll call a rideshare. Now get out of my way before I make you sing soprano.
Lena gave up ogling Nash and leaned over my shoulder.
Okay, what's their story?
I don't know. They won't tell anyone.
Oh, I love a torrid secret past, she said.
We can hear you, Sloane said dryly without breaking her sexy staring contest with Lucian.
We're all friends here, I began.
No, we're not,
Lucian insisted. Sloane's eyes blazed, making her look like a fiery pixie about to commit a homicide.
Finally, something we agree on.
My phone vibrated at Sloane's elbow. Seconds later, Lena's phone signaled a text. Nash and Lucian both reached for their pockets at the same time.
For someone who doesn't care about you, Nahak sure seems concerned about how you're doing, Lena said, holding up her phone again.
And what you're saying about him,
Lucian said with a smirk. I shook my head. I think I'm going to share that ride with Sloane.
No!
Lena grabbed my hand and squeezed.
Don't give him the satisfaction of ruining your day. Stay. We'll get more drinks, talk more shit, and everyone who stays has to swear a blood oath they won't report back to Nox.
I'm not staying if he's staying, Sloane said, shooting a murderous look at Lucian.
And the only way you're leaving is in my car, so sit down and order some goddamn food,
Lucian ordered. Sloane opened her mouth, and for a second I was worried she was going to bite him. I clapped a hand over her mouth. Let's get some nachos and another round of drinks. Missed calls. Nox, 4.
No fair. You said they were off limits, Joel.
A drunkard with a skullcap and tattoos under his eyes complained from one of the pool tables when we sat down at a table with Lucian and Nash. Joel flipped him the middle finger while our babysitters shared a look.
See, I told you we didn't need babysitters. We have Silver Fox Joel, I said.
Maybe we just want to spend some quality time with you,
Nash said, giving me the patented Morgan grin of sexiness. I sighed hard enough to blow a napkin across the table.
What's wrong, Nay? Sloane asked.
I thought about it for a beat.
Everything, I answered finally. Everything is wrong or broken or a mess. I used to have a plan. I used to have it all together. I know you guys might not believe this, but people didn't used to break into my house. I didn't have to fend off ex-fiancés or worry about the example I was setting for an 11-year-old going on 30.
I looked around the table at their concerned faces.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Forget the words came out of my face.
Sloane pointed a finger in my face.
Stop that!
I picked up my glass of water and blew bubbles in it.
Stop what? Stop acting like you don't have the right to express your own feelings.
Lena, looking stone sober despite the fact that she was on her 4th scotch, knocked her knuckles on the table.
Here, here. What's up with that?
She's the good twin, Sloane explained. Her sister sucks and put the family through the ringer. So Naomi made it her life mission to be the good kid and not inconvenience anyone with things like her feelings or her wants and needs.
Hey, mean, I complained.
She squeezed my hand.
I speak the truth with love.
I'm new here, Lena said. But wouldn't it be a good idea to show your niece what a strong, independent woman looks like when she lives her life?
Why does everyone keep saying that to me?
I groaned.
You know what I did for me? Just me?
What did you do?
Lucian asked kindly. I noticed that his chair was angled towards Sloane, crowding her almost protectively.
Nox! I did Nox just for me. I wanted to feel good and forget about the hurricane of crap for just one night. And look what happened. He warned me. He told me not to get attached, that there was no chance at a future. And I still fell for him. What is wrong with me?
Care to chime in here, gentlemen? Lena suggested. The men exchanged another look full of manly meaning.
I can hear them mentally going through the man code appendix, I whispered.
Nash wearily scraped his hand through his hair. It was a gesture that reminded me of his brother.
Are you okay? Do you need to rest? I asked.
He rolled his eyes.
I'm fine, Naomi.
Nash got shot, Sloane explained to Lena.
Her assessing gaze slid over him as if she could see through his clothing down to his skin.
That sucks, she said, lifting her glass to take a sip.
Not one of my favorite experiences, he admitted. Naomi, you've got to stop wondering what's wrong with you or what you did wrong, and understand the problem is with Nox.
Agreed,
Lucian said.
Look, we lost a lot when we were kids. That can fuck with some people's heads,
Nash said.
Lena studied him with interest. What did it do to yours?
His grin was a flash of humor. I'm a lot smarter than my brother.
She looked at me. See, no one wants to be real and put their baggage on the table.
When you trust someone to see you for who you really are, the betrayal is 1,000 times worse than if you hadn't handed them the weapons in the first place.
Lucian spoke quietly. I heard Sloane's sharp intake of breath.
Nash must have picked up on it too because he changed the subject. So, Lena, what brings you to town?
He asked, crossing his arms and leaning back in his chair. What are you, a cop? She joked.
I found that very amusing. Sloane found me spraying a fine mist of water over the table just as amusing, and we both dissolved into giggles.
A ghost of a smile played on Lucian's lips.
Nash is a cop, I told Lena. He's the cop, the big important one.
She eyed him over the rim of her glass. Interesting.
What did bring you to town? I asked her.
Found myself with some time off and I was in the area. Thought I'd pay my old friend a visit, she said.
What do you do? Sloane asked.
Lena ran her finger through a water ring on the table. I'm in insurance. I'd tell you more, but it's incredibly boring. Not nearly as exciting as getting shot. How did it happen? She asked Nash.
He shrugged his good shoulder.
Traffic stop gone bad?
They catch you did it? She asked.
Not yet, Lucian answered.
The chill in his tone had a shiver running down my spine.
I'm going to hit the restroom, I said.
I'll come,
Sloane volunteered, jumping out of her chair like it was electrocuting her.
I followed her into the gloomy hallway, but when she held the door open for me, Nash stopped me.
You got a second?
He asked. My bladder was nearing the red zone, but this sounded important.
Sure, I said, signaling to Sloane to commence peeing without me.
I just wanted you to know that I'm looking into the list you gave me, he said. I'm not officially back on duty, but that just means this is getting my undivided attention.
I appreciate that, Nash, I said, giving his arm a squeeze. It wasn't a crime to appreciate the muscle, right?
If you remember any other details about this red-haired guy, you'll let me know?
Sure, I said, my head bobbing. I only talked to him that one time, but he stands out in the crowd, muscular, tattooed, bright red hair. Nash's eyes got a funny, faraway look to them. Are you okay? I asked again. He gave an almost imperceptible head shake.
Yeah, fine.
Do you think he could have something to do with the break-in?
Nash did the Morgan nervous tick of running his hand through his hair.
He's a wild card, and I don't like wild cards. This guy just happens to show up at the library to talk to you.
He said he needed help with a computer problem. He nodded, and I could see him rearranging puzzle pieces in his head, trying to find the pattern.
Then you see him in the bar the night someone breaks into your place. That's not a coincidence.
I shivered. I just keep hoping whoever they were, they found whatever they were looking for. If they found it, there's no reason to come back.
I hope so too, he said. Did you talk to Waylay about it?
I did, finally. She took it pretty well.
She was more concerned about whether any of her new clothes had been stolen than the break-in itself.
She didn't seem to know what Tina or anyone else would have been looking for. I mean, it's not like we had a pallet of stolen TVs sitting around in the living room.
Been thinking,
Nash said, rubbing a hand over his jaw.
It doesn't have to be stolen goods. If Tina was bragging about a big payday, it could have been a different kind of job.
Like what?
People get paid to do a lot of shit. Maybe she gave up on moving stolen property and got mixed up in something else. Maybe they got their hands on information that someone else wanted, or that someone didn't want anyone else to know.
How does someone lose or hide information? He smiled sweetly at me.
Not everyone's as organized as you are, honey.
If this whole thing is about something Tina was irresponsible enough to lose, I am going to be pissed, I told him. She went through 9 house keys. 9! And don't even get me started on the car keys. His smile stayed fixed in place.
It's going to be all right, Naomi. I promise you.
I nodded. But I couldn't stop thinking of all the ways Tina had managed to hurt me, despite my parents' best efforts. How were a small-town police department and a wounded chief supposed to protect us? And then it hit me. Maybe it was time for me to start standing up for myself. Nash leaned against the wall. His expression gave nothing away, but I was willing to bet money that he was in pain.
There is something I wanted to ask you, he said, looking serious.
There is, I croaked. Sure, Nash was as unfairly gorgeous as his jerk of a brother. He certainly had a more amiable personality, and he was great with kids, great with waylay. But if he asked me out just days after his brother, I was going to have to let him down easy. I had 0 headspace for another Morgan brother, and I needed to focus on my niece and the guardianship.
You mind if I have a word with Waylay?
He asked. I jolted, rewinding his words to see if I'd somehow missed the dinner invitation. Nope. Waylay? Why?
I might ask the right question and help her remember something important from before her mom left. She knows Tina better than any of us.
I bristled. Do you think she has something to do with this?
No, honey, I don't. But I know what it's like to be a kid who keeps quiet, plays things close to the vest.
I could see that about him. Knox was the stand up and pitch a fit about a problem kind of guy. On the outside, Nash was Mr. Nice Guy. But there was a quiet depth there, and I wondered what secrets lurked beneath that surface. Okay, I agreed. But I'd like to be with you when you do talk to her. She's finally starting to trust me, to open up to me. So I want to be there.
Absolutely.
He tucked a strand of hair behind my ear, and I thought about what a good guy he was. Then I wished it was Knox's fingers in my hair. And then I got mad all over again. The restroom door opened and Sloane walked out. More accurately, she stumbled. I caught her, and she smiled up at me and squished my cheeks between her hands.
You are so pretty.
I'll escort this one back to the table, Nash volunteered.
You're really pretty too, Nash, Sloane said.
I know. It's a curse, Sloaney Baloney.
Aw, you remember,
she crooned as he led her back to the bar. I stepped into the ladies' room and decided it was not a room I wanted to linger in, so I made quick work of taking care of business and then ducked back into the hall. There were no babysitters lurking, so I pulled out my phone and opened my email. Glancing over my shoulder to make sure Lucian or Nash hadn't materialized, I started a new message. To Tina, from Naomi. Subject, what you're looking for. Tina, I don't know what you're looking for. But if it gets you out of my life, I'll help you find it. Tell me what I'm looking for and how I can get it to you. N. If I could find whatever it was Tina wanted first, I'd have the leverage I needed to get her out of my life. If it wasn't something like nuclear codes, I could let her have it, or I could at least use it as bait to lure her out of hiding. I waited for the tiny pinprick of guilt, but it never came. I was still waiting when my phone rang in my hand. Knox Morgan. I didn't know if it was the fireball or all the pitying pep talks, but I felt more than ready to take charge. Squaring my shoulders, I answered the call. What?
Naomi, thank God.
He sounded relieved. What do you want, Knox?
Look, I don't know what Lena told you, but this wasn't what you think.
What I think? I said, cutting him off, is that your love life is none of my business.
Oh, come on, don't be like that.
I'll be any damn way I want to be, and you have no say in it. You need to stop texting and calling. We're over. You walked.
Naomi, just because we're not together doesn't mean I don't want you safe.
His voice, the rawness in it, went straight to my chest. I felt like I couldn't breathe.
That's very chivalrous of you, but I don't need you to keep me safe. There's a whole other line of defense in place. You're officially free. Enjoy it.
Days, I don't know how to make you understand.
That's just it, Knox. I do understand. I understand that you cared, and it scared you. I understand that Waylay and I weren't reward enough to get you to face that fear. I get it. I'm dealing. You made the call. Now you have to deal with the consequences. But I'm not like Lena. I'm not going to insist on being friends. In fact, consider this my notice. Tomorrow night is my last shift at Honky Tonk. Just because we live in the same damn small town doesn't mean we have to see each other all the damn time.
Naomi, this isn't what I wanted.
Honestly, I don't care what you want. For once, I'm thinking about what I want. Now, stop calling. Stop texting. Call off your babysitters and let me live my life because you're no longer a part of it.
Look, if this is about what I said about you and Nash, I apologize. He told me...
I'm going to stop you right there before you call me your leftovers again. I don't care what you say or think about me and any man I might choose to see. I don't need your opinions or your half-assed apologies. Who apologizes by saying,
I apologize?
I demanded, making sure my imitation of him was far from flattering. There was silence on the other end, and for a second I'd hoped he'd hung up on me.
How much have you had to drink?
He asked. I held the phone up to my face and screamed into it. I heard the scrape of chairs, and moments later Lucian and Nash were standing in the mouth of the hallway. I held up a finger to keep them at bay.
I suggest you lose this number, because if you call me again, I won't make Waylay give your dog back.
Naomi.
I hung up and stuffed the phone into my pocket. Can one of you give me a ride home? I have a headache. But it was nothing compared to the ache in my chest.
45. The Bar Fight. Knox. I blew into Honky Tonk under a full head of steam. I hadn't slept last night. Not after that phone call with Naomi. The woman was a stubborn nightmare. She didn't care that I was trying to do what was best for her. She didn't want to see it from my perspective. Quitting a good job just because she got her feelings hurt was a stupid fucking reason to turn her back on cash. And I was going to tell her that. Instead of the usual greetings from the kitchen staff, I got a couple of furtive glances, and suddenly everyone was too busy with what they were doing to even acknowledge me. Everyone needed to get their heads out of their asses and get over it. I pushed through the doors into the bar and found Naomi leaning over a table in the corner, laughing at something her mom was saying. Lou and Amanda were there for the drinks portion of their weekly date night. I knew it had nothing to do with supporting my business and everything to do with showing their support for their daughter. The rest of her section was already full, because she drew people to her. Knockemout had welcomed her just as it had me and my brother all those years ago. If she thought she was going to leave me behind, she was about to be disappointed. A long, denim-clad leg kicked out in front of me, blocking my path.
Whoa, cowboy. You look like you're about to murder someone.
I don't have time for games, Lena, I told her.
Then stop playing them.
I'm not the one playing. I fucking told her just like I told you how it was going to go. It went the way I said. She's got no right to be pissed at me.
You ever think about telling her the real reason why you are the way you are?
She asked, lifting a glass of what I had a feeling was my private stock of bourbon. What are you talking about? I asked evenly. She rolled her neck like she was warming up for a fight.
Listen, Knox. Women have this sixth sense when we're being served up half-truths.
You got a point? Naomi left her table with a little wave and was headed to the next one, a foretop full of bikers.
She knows there's more to it than what you're sharing. I knew it, and I'd be willing to bet every woman in between knew it too. We're suckers for a wounded man. We think we can be the one you'll let in, the one who will magically fix you with our love. Come on, Lena. I'm serious. But you just keep pushing all of us away, and I think that's because you don't want to acknowledge your truth. You sound like a fucking TV therapist. Bottom line, my friend, Naomi deserves your truth, even if it's ugly. She's not going to forgive you and get over it, as you so eloquently put it, unless you're straight with her. I think you owe it to her. I really don't like you right now, I told her. She grinned. And I don't really care. She polished off her drink and set the empty on the bar. I'll see you later. Try not to fuck it up even more. It was with those words ringing in my ears that I rounded the bar and caught Naomi at the POS. She hadn't seen me yet, so I stood there looking my fill, my body tense with the need to touch her. Her face was flushed. Her hair was styled in sexy waves. She was back in one of those damn jean skirts. This one looked new and even shorter than the others. She wore cowboy boots and a long-sleeved honky-tonk V-neck. She looked like every man's fantasy. She looked like my fantasy. Need to talk to you, I said. She jolted when I spoke, then looked me up and down before turning away. I grabbed her arm. That's not a request. In case you haven't noticed, I have 7 tables, boss. I'm busy. It's my last night. There's nothing that needs to be said. You're wrong, Daisy. It's not your last night, and there's a lot I need you to hear. We were close, too close. My senses were full of her. Her scent, the velvet softness of her skin, the sound of her voice. It all went straight to my gut. She felt it, too. The attraction hadn't simply vanished because I'd called it quits. If anything, the last week spent without her made me want her even more. I fucking missed waking up next to her. Missed seeing her at Liza's table. Missed walking way late to the bus stop. Missed the way I felt when Naomi kissed me like she couldn't help herself. The music from the speakers kicked over to a lively country anthem, and the bar cheered. I'm busy, Viking. If you drag me out of here, you're only hurting your own profit margins. I clenched my jaw. Get your table sorted. You're on break in 15. My office. Yeah, okay, she said, her tone dripping with sarcasm. If you're not in my office in 15, I will come out here, throw you over my shoulder, and carry your ass back there. I leaned in closer, almost close enough to kiss her. And there is no way that skirt of yours is up for that. I felt her shiver against me when my lips brushed her ear. 15 minutes, Naomi, I said, and left her standing there. Sixteen minutes later, I was alone in my office and royally pissed. I yanked the door open so hard the hinges rattled. When I hit the bar, Naomi's head came up at the service bar like a doe sensing danger. I went straight for her. Those eyes went wide when she read my intention. Warned you, I told her as she took a step back and then another. Don't you dare, Knox! But I fucking dared. I caught her by the arm and bent at the waist. She was up over my shoulder in less than a second. It was like a record scratch. The bar went completely silent except for Darius Rucker on the speakers. Max, run those drinks, I said, nodding at Naomi's tray. Naomi squirmed, trying to right herself, but I wasn't having any of it. I gave her a hard slap on the ass, catching denim, cotton, and bare skin. The bar erupted into pandemonium. Naomi squeaked and reached for the hem of her skirt. She was wearing the underwear I bought her, and I knew that as frosty as she'd been, she fucking missed me. Everyone can see my underwear, she yelped. I laid my palm over her ass. Better. I am going to slap you so hard your head spins around, she threatened as I marched us out of the bar and toward my office. By the time I hit the code on the door, she'd stopped fighting me and hung upside down with her arms crossed in what I could only assume was a pout. I hated to take my hands off her. I wished there was a way to get through this without letting her go. But I wasn't a great conversationalist under normal circumstances, and when I had an aching dick, I was even worse. I grabbed her by the hips and let her slide down my body until her toes hit the floor. For a moment, we stood there, pressed against each other like we were one. And for just a second, as she looked into my eyes with her palms pressed flat on my chest, everything felt right. Then she was pushing away from me and stepping back. "What the hell do you want from me, Knox? You said you didn't want to be together. We're not together. I'm not following you around, begging for another chance. I respected your wishes." I was worried she'd get the wrong answer if she looked below my belt, so I steered her to the chair behind my desk. "Sit." She glared at me for a full 30 seconds with her arms crossed before giving in. "Fine," she said, flopping down in my chair. But the distance didn't make me feel better. I was starting to realize the only thing that did was being close to her. "You keep saying you want one thing and then acting like you want something completely different," she said. "I know." That shut her up. I needed to move, so I paced in front of the desk, needing to keep something between us. "There's something you don't know." Her fingers drummed on her arms. "You gonna enlighten me anytime soon, or do I have to kiss all those tips out there goodbye?" I shoved my hands through my hair, scraped one down over my beard. I felt sweaty and twitchy. "Don't rush me, okay?" "I am not going to miss working for you," she said. "Fuck. Naomi, just give me a second. I don't talk about this shit to anyone, okay?" "Why start now?" She stood up. "You met my father." I blurted out the words. Slowly, she sank back into the chair. I started pacing again. "At the shelter," I said. "Oh my God, Duke," she said. The realization hit her. "You cut his hair. You introduced us." I hadn't introduced them. Naomi had introduced herself. "When my mom died, he didn't deal. He started drinking. Stopped going to work. Got busted for a DUI. That's when Liza and Pop took us in. They were grieving too. For them, being around me and Nash wasn't some painful reminder of what they lost. But for my father, he couldn't even look at us. The drinking continued here. Right here at the bar before it was honky-tonk. Maybe that's why I bought it. Why I'd felt compelled to turn it into something better. When the alcohol stopped numbing him, he went looking for something harder. So many memories I thought I'd buried came rushing back. Dad with bloodshot eyes, scratches and scabs all on his arms, bruises and cuts he didn't remember on his face. Dad curled on the floor of the kitchen, screaming about bugs. Dad unresponsive on Nash's bed, an empty bottle of pills next to him. I chanced a glance up at her. Naomi was sitting stock still, eyes wide and sad. It was better than the frosty indifference. He was in and out of rehab half a dozen times before my grandparents kicked him out. I shoved my hand through my hair and gripped the back of my neck. Naomi didn't say anything. He never got his shit together. Never tried. Nash and I weren't enough of a reason for him to hang on. We lost my mom, but she didn't choose to leave us. I swallowed hard. Dad, he chose. He abandoned us. He wakes up every day and makes the same choice. She blew out a shaky breath, and I saw tears in her eyes. Don't, I warned her. She gave a little nod and blinked them back. I turned away from her, determined to get it all said. Liza, Jay, and Pop did their best to make it okay for us. We had Lucian, we had school, we had dogs and the creek. It took a few years, but it was good. We were okay. We were living our lives. And then Pop had a heart attack. Keeled over, fixing the downspout on the back of the house. Dead before he hit the ground. I heard the chair move, and a second later, Naomi's arms came around my waist. She didn't say anything,
just pressed herself against my back and held on. I let her. It was selfish, but I wanted the comfort of her body against mine. I took a breath to fight off the tightness in my chest. It was like losing them all over again. So much useless fucking loss. It was too much for Liza J. She broke down and cried in front of the casket. This silent, never-ending well of tears as she stood over the man she'd loved for her entire life. I've never felt more helpless in my entire goddamn existence. She shuttered the lodge, drew the curtains to keep the lights out. She stopped living. Once again, I hadn't been enough to make someone I loved want to go on. Those curtains stayed closed until you, I whispered. I felt her hitch against me, heard a ragged breath. Fuck, Naomi, I told you not to cry.
I'm not crying,
she sniffled. I dragged her around to my front. Tears streaked her beautiful face. Her lower lip trembled. That's in my blood. My dad, Liza J, they couldn't deal. They lost themselves and everything around them spiraled out of control. I come from that. I can't afford to give up like that. I already have people who depend on me. Hell, some days it feels like this whole damn town needs something from me. I can't put myself in a position where I'll let them all down. She let out a slow, shaky breath.
I can see how you'd feel that way, she said finally.
Don't feel sorry for me. I squeezed her arms. She swiped a hand under her eyes.
I'm not feeling sorry for you. I'm wondering how you're not a larger teeming mess of trauma and insecurities. You and your brother should be very proud of yourselves.
I snorted, then gave in to the urge to pull her into me. I rested my chin on the top of her head. I'm sorry, Naomi, but I don't know how to be different. She stilled against me, then tilted her head back to look at me.
Wow. Knox Morgan just said he was sorry.
Yeah, well, don't get used to it. Her face crumpled, and I realized what a stupid fucking thing it was to say. Shit, I'm sorry, baby. I'm an asshole.
Yeah,
she agreed, sniffing heroically. I looked around my office. But I was a man. I didn't keep a box of tissues handy. Here, I said, maneuvering us toward the couch where my gym bag sat. I yanked a t-shirt out of it and used it to mop up the tears that were ripping me to shreds inside. The fact that she let me made them a little easier to handle.
Knox?
Yeah, Daisy.
I hope someday you meet the woman who makes it all worth it.
I nudged her chin up. Baby, I don't think you get it. If it wasn't you and Wei, it's never going to be anybody.
That's really sweet and really messed up at the same time,
she whispered. I know.
Thank you for telling me.
Thanks for listening. I felt different, lighter somehow, as if I'd managed to throw open my own curtains or some shit like that. We good? I asked, threading my fingers through her hair and tucking it behind her ears. Or do you still hate me?
Well, I hate you a whole lot less than when I started my shift.
My lips quirked. Does this mean you'd be willing to stay on? Customers love you, staff loves you, and the boss is pretty damn fond of you. I was more than fond of her. Holding her like this, talking to her like this, something was happening in my chest and it felt like fireworks. She pressed her lips together and brought her hands to my chest.
Knox,
she said. I shook my head. I know. It's not fair to ask you to hang around when I can't be what you deserve.
I don't think my heart is safe around you.
Naomi, the last thing I want to do is hurt you. She closed her eyes.
I know that. I get it. But I don't know how to protect myself from the hope.
I nudged her chin up. Look at me. She did as I told her. Talk. She rolled her eyes.
I mean, look at us, Knox. We both know this is going nowhere, yet we're still literally entwined.
God, I love that fancy vocabulary of hers.
I'll be able to remind myself for a while that you can't be with me, but sooner or later I'm going to start forgetting, because you're you, and you want to take care of everybody and everything. You'll buy Waylay a dress that she loves, or my mom will talk you into golfing with her on the weekends, or you'll bring me coffee when I most need it again, or you'll punch my ex in the face again, and I'll forget, and I'll fall all over again. What do you want me to do? I asked, gathering her against me again. I can't be who you want me to be, but I can't let you go. She cupped a hand to my cheek and stared up at me with something that looked a hell of a lot like love. Unfortunately, Viking, those are your only two choices. Someone once told me in this very room that it doesn't matter how shitty the options are, it's still a choice. I think that guy also told you that there's a man out there who knew on his best day he was never going to be good enough for you. She gave me a squeeze and then started to slide out of my grip.
I need to get back out there.
It went against every instinct I had to let her go, but I did it anyway. I felt strange, open, exposed, raw, but also better. She'd forgiven me. I'd shown her who I really was, what I came from, and she'd accepted it all. Any chance I could get my dog back? I asked. She gave me a sad smile.
That's between you and Waylay. I think maybe she could use an apology from you, too. She's with Liza tonight.
I nodded. Yeah. Okay. Naomi? She stopped at the door and looked back. Do you think if we would have carried on, I mean, if we hadn't called it off, is it possible that you would have... I couldn't get the words out. They clogged my throat and closed it up.
Yeah,
she said with a sad smile that had my insides churning. Yeah, what? I pressed.
I would have loved you.
How do you know? I demanded, my voice a rasp.
Because I already do, dummy.
And with that, she walked out of my office.
46. Tina sucks. Naomi. I went straight to the restroom to repair my face. Knox Morgan sure did a number on a woman's makeup. After I cleaned up the sad clown face and reapplied my lipstick, I gave my reflection a long, hard look. The tiny shards of my broken heart were now ground into a fine dust, thanks to Knox's confession. No wonder, I whispered to my reflection. There were things a person never got over. We both just wanted someone to love us enough to make up for all the times we hadn't been enough. It felt like such a waste that we could feel the way we did, but neither of us could be that person for the other. I couldn't make Knox love me enough, and the sooner I got over that, the better. Maybe someday we could be friends. If I won the custody hearing, and if Waylay and I decided to make Knockemout our permanent home. Thinking of Waylay, I dug my phone out of my apron to check my messages. Earlier this week, I'd approved a messaging app for her laptop so she could text me if she needed to. In return, she'd downloaded a GIF keyboard on my phone so we could exchange GIFs throughout the day. Oh, great, I groaned when I saw the dozen new texts. Silver, nice undies. Max, this better mean you guys are making up. Mom, 6 flame emojis. Fee, we're covering your table, so feel free to have as many orgasms in Noxie's office as you need. Sloan, Lena just texted, along with 9 other people at the bar. Did that son of a bitch really carry you off like he was a caveman? I hope you rearranged his face and his balls. Waylay, Aunt Naomi, I'm in trouble. The breath in my lungs froze when I read the last text. She'd sent it 15 minutes ago. With shaking hands, I fired off a response as I rushed out of the restroom. Me, are you okay? What's wrong? There are a lot of reasons an 11-year-old could think they were in trouble, I rationalized. It didn't mean there was an actual emergency. Maybe she forgot her math homework. Maybe she accidentally broke Liza's favorite garden cherub. Maybe she'd gotten her period. I also had 3 missed calls in the last 5 minutes from an unknown number. Something was wrong. I headed for the kitchen and scrolled through my contacts for Liza's number.
Everything okay, Naomi?
Milford asked as I hustled for the parking lot. Yeah, I think so. Just have to make a quick call, I said before pushing through the exterior door into the cold night air. I was getting ready to hit call when headlights from a car blinded me. I held up my hand to block the light and stepped back. Naomi. My arms dropped limply to my side. I knew that voice. Tina? My twin sister leaned out the driver's side window. I felt like I was looking in the mirror again, a funhouse mirror. Her formerly bleached hair was now a dark brown and cut short in a style similar to mine. Our eyes were the same hazel. The differences were subtle. She was wearing a cheap fake leather jacket. She had multiple earrings in both ears. Her eyeliner was thick and blue. But she looked as worried as I felt.
He's got Waylay. He took her, she said.
My stomach dropped, and a wave of nausea crested as every muscle in my body tightened.
What? Who took her? Where is she?
It's all my fault, Tina wailed.
We need to go. You have to help me. I know where he took her.
We should call the police, I said, remembering I had a phone in my hand.
Call him on the way. We gotta move fast, she said. Come on.
Operating on autopilot, I opened the passenger door and climbed in. I was reaching for my seatbelt when something furry clamped over my wrist.
What are you doing? I shrieked.
Tina grabbed my other arm, her fingernails digging into my wrist. I tried to pull away but wasn't quick enough. She snapped the other cuff in place.
For the smart one, you sure are stupid, she said, lighting a cigarette.
My evil twin had just handcuffed me to the dashboard with furry sex cuffs.
Where's Waylay?
Relax. She blew a stream of smoke in my direction.
The kid's fine. You will be too if you cooperate. Cooperate how? With who?
I yanked against the cuffs. She let out a cackle as she pulled out of the parking lot.
Pretty funny, right? Found those in a box of sex toys in my old asshole landlord's storage unit. Gross!
I was going to need to scrub myself with bleach when this was over. My phone was face down on the floor. If I could get to it, I could call someone. I yanked on the cuffs again, yelping when they bit into my skin.
Got your email, my sister said conversationally. Figured between you and that kid of mine, we'd find what I'm looking for real quick.
Find what? I nudged my phone with the toe of my boot in an effort to flip it over. The angle wasn't quite right, and instead of flipping it over, it slid further under the dash.
Doesn't surprise me that you don't know. One thing that doesn't suck about my kid is she sure knows how to keep her damn mouth shut. My man and I got our hands on some pretty important information that a lot of people would pay a lot of money to get. Kept it on a flash drive. Flash drive went missing.
What does this have to do with Waylay? This time the nudge was just enough to flip the phone over and unfortunately turn the screen on. The glow was not subtle.
Oh, nice try, Goody.
My sister leaned down and reached for the phone. The car swerved off the road onto the berm, headlights shining on a long run of pasture fence.
Watch out!
I ducked as we smashed right through the fence and came to a stop in the grassy horse pasture. My head smacked against the dashboard and I saw stars.
Whoops, Tina said, sitting up holding my phone.
Ouch! God, you haven't gotten any better at driving, have you?
Orgasms and undies, she mused, scrolling through my texts. Huh, maybe you got more interesting since high school.
I leaned down so I could use a shackled hand to prod my aching forehead.
You better not have hurt Waylay, you irresponsible ignoramus. Vocabulary's still working just fine. What the hell do you take me for? I wouldn't hurt my own daughter.
She sounded insulted.
Look, I said wearily. Just take me to Waylay. That's the plan, Goody.
Goody was short for Goody Two Shoes, the nickname Tina had saddled me with when we were all of 9 years old and she wanted to see how high we could shoot arrows into the air with our uncle's crossbow that she found. I wished I had that crossbow now. I cannot believe we're related. Makes two of us, she said, tossing her cigarette followed by my phone out the window. She cranked the radio and stomped on the accelerator. The car fishtailed wildly on the damp grass before careening through the gaping hole in the fence. 30 minutes later, Tina turned off the pothole-ridden road that cut through a run-down-looking industrial section of a DC suburb. She pulled up to a chain-link fence and laid on the horn. Subtlety was not my sister's specialty. I'd spent the entire drive thinking about Waylay and Knox, about my parents, Liza, Nash, Sloane, the honky-tonk girls, about how I'd finally, somehow, managed to make a home for myself only to have Tina show up and ruin it all, again. Two shadowy figures dressed in denim and leather appeared and wrestled the gate open with an ear-splitting screech. I needed to stick to my strengths and play it smart. I'd get to Waylay and then find a way out. I could do this. We pulled through the gate and Tina brought the car to a stop in front of a loading dock. She lit another cigarette, her fourth of the trip. You shouldn't smoke so much. What are you, the lung police? It gives you wrinkles. That's what plastic surgeons are for, Tina said, hefting her significantly larger fake breasts. That's the problem with you. Always too worried about the consequences to have any fun. And you never gave the consequences a thought, I pointed out. Look at where that got you. You abandoned and then kidnapped Waylay, abducted me, not to mention stole from me on multiple occasions. Now you're moving stolen products.
Yeah, and which one of us is having more fun?
Actually, I've been sleeping with Knox Morgan. She eyed me through the smoke.
You're shitting me.
I shook my head.
I am not shitting you.
She thumped the steering wheel and cackled.
Well, well, look at little Goody Two Shoes finally loosening up. Next thing, you'll be jumping on the pole at amateur night and shoplifting scratch-offs.
I seriously doubted that.
What? Who knows? Maybe you loosen up enough, we might find that sisterly bond you were always whining about, Tina said, slapping my thigh with what might have been affection. But first, we gotta get this business taken care of.
I held up my handcuffed hands.
What kind of business can I take care of with sex cuffs on?
She reached into the pocket of her door and produced a set of keys.
Here's the thing. Need you to do me a favor.
Anything for you, Tina, I said dryly.
I bet my man $100 I could get you here without knocking you out or forcing you. Told him you were a natural-born sucker. He said there was no way I could get you to march on in there all free will and shit. So here's how this is gonna go. I'm gonna uncuff you and take you upstairs to my man and kid. You're not gonna tell him about these.
She ruffled the purple leopard fur on the cuff closest to her. My sister was an idiot.
If I uncuff you and you try to run, or if you open your tattletale mouth up there, I'll make sure you never see Waylay again.
An idiot with a surprising grasp of what motivated people. She grinned.
Yeah, I knew you'd like her. Figured she'd like you too, seeing as how you're into all that girly shit. Knew you'd be the best place to park my kid till I was ready to hit the road.
Waylay's a great girl, I said.
She ain't some whiny tattletale like some people, she said, shooting me a pointed look. Anyway, I win my bet. You get to spend some quality time with the kid before we head off to our payday.
She wanted to take Waylay with her. I felt an icy sickness settle in my gut, but said nothing.
We got a deal?
I nodded. Yeah, yes, we have a deal.
Let's get me my $100, Tina said cheerfully.
I counted three more swarthy degenerates, all with guns, inside the warehouse. The first floor had nearly a dozen flashy vehicles parked inside. Some were under tarps, some sat with their hoods up and doors open.
On the other side of the loading dock were boxes of TVs and what looked like other stolen goods. It was cold, and I wasn't dressed for it.
"Let's go, Goody. Got shit to do,"
Tina said, leading the way up the metal stairs to the second floor, an area that looked like it had once housed offices. My sister threw open the door and strutted inside.
"Mama's home," she announced.
I hesitated outside the door and sent up a silent prayer to the good twin gods. I was scared. I would have given anything to have Knox or Nash or the entire Knockemout Police Department with me, but that wasn't going to happen. I needed to be my own hero tonight, or I was going to lose everything. I straightened my shoulders and crossed the threshold to do what I did best, triage the mess. There was heat inside, thank God. Not much, but enough that at least my lady parts wouldn't freeze. There was also a distinct odor of old takeout food, most likely coming from the stack of pizza boxes and to-go containers on a long folding table. Dingy glass windows overlooked the warehouse floor and the exterior. Against a third wall was a futon topped with what looked like very expensive sheets and no fewer than 6 pillows. There were 2 rolling racks of designer clothing that created a makeshift closet. A dozen pairs of high-end men's sneakers and loafers were organized on another folding table. The floor was sticky, the ceiling had holes in it, and there was a thick layer of grime on the windows. I itched to find the Lysol and start scrubbing until I spotted the table, stacked nearly a foot high with bundles of cash.
"Told ya,"
Tina said triumphantly, hooking her thumb in my direction.
"Walked right in, didn't she?"
I stopped short when I recognized the man in the large leather office chair in front of the flat.